Hello, and welcome to the CISC podcast. In each edition of this series, you'll have the chance to meet a CISC staff member or other educational professional involved with the CISC community. We think you will find these podcasts of great value as a variety of people share their unique insights in their respective fields. Now, please enjoy this edition of the podcast as our host, Bob Kretzmer, speaks with our guest.
Wildfires have been in the headlines in all newspapers across the state of California over the last few years. While none were more devastating than the campfire that struck Paradise, California in 2018, the cumulative effect of fire and smoke damage all over the state has significantly impacted the cost of property insurance. Ryan Telford of Amwins Insurance Brokerage of California is the individual who has guided CISC management through these difficult times. His years of experience as a broker have helped to educate our membership as to the reasons for increased premium costs and steps that can be taken to reduce risk. In this episode of the CISC podcast, we hear from Ryan as he provides valuable insight to the current state of the markets. Ryan, thank you for being here and taking the time to speak with us today. We really appreciate your counsel. And again, it's just always good to see you.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me.
So, Ryan, what is your role as the excess broker for the CISC program?
As a property specialist, my role is to basically take the account out to market each year. That includes putting together all the data, which includes the statement of values. We do summaries of loss history, and basically we go to market and collect quotes in and then present terms for the districts.
And as we sit here today, what do you think are the factors most influencing the property insurance markets that you deal with? Particularly, you know, what are causing the increases in premium that all of us as public entities are experiencing?
Yeah, so I've been involved in the placement for about 15 years, and I think for the first 10, we were basically seeing soft market conditions, meaning pricing was relatively soft and costs were affordable. There's many years where we're bringing discounts to the table year over year. Terms were easy to come by. And I don't think there's one particular loss. Like, you know, we've seen the market change, you know, post 9/11 after the Hurricane Katrina. I think that was in 2005. Those events single-handedly changed the market. So I don't think there's a particular event that we've seen over the last several years, but what we've seen is a constant level of, you know, sizable events. And I think in 2017, after about 10 years of soft market conditions, the market just couldn't simply bear, you know, the pricing that we were seeing. Underwriting results were poor, and basically turned a corner to where we saw pricing begin to creep up, and we've had about four consistent years of pricing going up. 2020 is no different. I brought some notes here that I wanted to share. In 2020, we saw 22 separate events, each of which caused in excess of $1 billion in losses.
$1 billion?
$1 billion.
Yeah. Wow.
And we had 12 hurricanes make landfall in 2020, which was a new record. Hurricane Laura was the largest hurricane in record to make landfall in terms of wind speed, yet it was relatively small in terms of insured losses at $19 billion, considering it hit mostly rural Louisiana. In 2020, we also saw three of the largest wildfires in Colorado's history and five of the six largest wildfires in California's history in terms of acreage burned. Throw in COVID-19, which really hasn't impacted the public sector as much, but has been basically decimated the hospitality and entertainment space. From an insurance perspective, I think reinsurers have pegged that at about a $30 billion insured event. And so one other stat I wanted to share is that the last 4 years since 2017, the insurance sector has paid out $400 billion in property catastrophe claims. And this compares to just $160 billion during the same previous four-year period. So, you know, there's a big debate going on right now as why is this happening? But the reality is the weather-related events have spiked, and as a result, insured losses are up. So underwriters are seeing this, and it's basically influencing their underwriting and their appetite to deploy capital into this space.
And when you say, for the non-insurance people, Ryan, when you say underwriting reports were less than good, what do you mean more specifically by that? What were some of the factors within that?
I think when you look at just loss ratios on books of business, you know, there was a time when, you know, like an AIG could have 115 or 120% loss ratio, meaning for every dollar they took in, they'd pay out $1.20 in losses, right? They were able to maybe invest that money into other avenues and still run a profitable company. You know, interest rates the way that they are, that's gone away. And then I think we've just had where the pricing levels are and the amount of losses that are being paid out. It just wasn't a profitable business. So something had to be done.
Now, to the extent the fires in the state of California have influenced those losses, can you comment on that at all? Has that been one of the biggest factors?
Yeah, for sure for California, not just schools in general. We've seen a lot of standard markets exit the space. Travelers, Affiliated FM, AIG, where they've traditionally wrote 100% of a deal, they've basically said, look, we can't do this anymore because of the fire exposure, right? So those particular deals, we've seen them go from an admitted paper to a non-admitted status. And in some cases, we've seen pricing go up 400%. At the same time, even our markets that we deal with that have historically wrote hard-to-place business have reduced the amount of capacity that they're deploying on any particular risk. You know, we've seen people, you know, on CISC in particular, it used to be that we looked at a campus, right? And we would decide, all right, what's the largest single exposure from a fire perspective? It could be a single building on the campus. It could be the campus itself. But once you get above that, it would be what we call outside of a fire PML, right? And so above that would be very cheap. We could do a 90x a 10 for 500 a mil. Those deals have gone away. People are mostly concerned about wildfire. They're worried about an event hitting multiple campuses and having a $100, $200 million type of loss. So when you have carriers shrink their capacity, you have more players being involved, and that drives the cost up.
If I can deviate just a second, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think you had some involvement with the campfire up in Paradise.
That's correct.
California.
Travelers was writing that at the time, but I think they had an estimate of just over $80 million in losses there. So historically, most of the school business that I see, we typically see smoke damage. That was one of the rare instances where we've seen actual buildings burn, or in this case, a whole high school went down.
And if I remember correctly, that $80 million loss figure for the school district was one of the largest ever in the state of California. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. I mean, yeah. We've seen smoke damage in the $20 million range, but nothing to that effect. So when you're layering deals and you have primary 10 and a 15 over 10, those excess layers are really cheap, right? You know, you could, like I said, 500 a mil. So if you have a loss that goes in, it would take so many years to repay yourself to stay on that. So that's where people have come back and said, look, we can only put up $5 million on a deal where we used to put up $25 million. And we used to charge 500 a mil. Now we want 5,000 a mil. So you can see how hard and difficult it is to put those excess limits together.
I think I can speak from our experience at CISC over the last 5 years, if we take that time period relative to these increased fire risks, I believe we've only had one building actually burn as a result of the fires that we've experienced in the 19 counties where CISC has membership, and all of the other losses have been related to smoke damage, which, as you know, has amounted to several million dollars. So it really is unfortunate that these fires not only bring such devastating structural damage in the case of Paradise, but the bulk of it seems to be this smoke cleanup, which is affecting school districts up and down the state.
I think the smoke cleanup, what we've seen is those costs seem to be going down. And I think some of it is when you have you have experience dealing with that, you know, in future years, usually you have the ability to potentially do cleanup costs with your own janitorial staff rather than going out to a third party. You're more prepared. So we have seen some of those costs go down. Just one quick comment. You know, historically, when carriers price this stuff, they've looked at how is this account performed, right? How is the losses performed on this particular risk, right? Now carriers are deviating from that, and they're looking at wildfire modeling, right? And that's relatively new. We're trying to keep up with who's using wildfire modeling, but it's not necessarily how is this account performed based on the losses that have happened. It's looking into the model and saying, what's the worst case scenario that the model is telling us? And that's a big part of how they're pricing and deploying their capacity.
You know, for those of us who may not be familiar with that term wildfire modeling, can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so I'm not an expert in modeling, but we do have modeling teams consisting of actuaries, right? And so what they do is they take the data, and that takes like the longitude and latitude of where the locations are, takes into consideration the construction, whether or not the buildings are sprinklered, and then it runs it through like a Monte Carlo simulation of events, and then it basically spits out what they think the average annual loss would be based on having certain size events. And then what they use is return periods, right? So if you ever heard the term of a 100-year storm, right, the farther you go out, the larger the event size. So they look at between 100 and 250-year events, but the model actually goes up to a 10,000-year event.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm asked this question, Ryan, on the liability side and also on the property side by member districts. They would like to know what they can do to help reduce loss exposure at the district level. Do you have any advice you can share?
Yeah, I think, you know, a concise loss control plan is always the key to managing loss exposures. You know, we're in the business of insuring losses, right? And if we could figure out a way to stop them, we wouldn't be in business anymore. But, you know, there are ways to reduce exposure and reduce the severity of risks. You know, when you think of water damage, right, you can have a location that has, you know, two or three losses, right, with water damage. At some point, an insurance company is going to say, look, we're either going to take a higher deductible or we're no longer going to insure this location until you get a plumber out to look at the plumbing and give us something in writing saying, hey, you know, we've fixed the situation. This shouldn't happen again. Because insurance companies, they're there for the sudden and accidental events, but they don't want to keep paying year after year. So when you think about, you know, vandalism or arson, right, you know, you want to have good security in place. You want to have fencing, lighting, roaming security guards. Those things actually the work. You know, the big thing now is from a wildfire perspective. How do you prevent, you know, smoke and soot and ash from landing on a building, right? You really can't. But you can do things to help reduce the overall cost of the cleanup, right? We've seen districts go as far as adding door sweeps to each of the doors, flaps on the AC units. We've seen, you know, evacuation plans with checklists where they're making sure there's no debris up against the buildings that could catch fire. We've seen folks working with hygienists, contracting with hygienists to make sure the air quality is good for students to return to campus. We've seen folks contract with forensic accountants to review any third-party vendors that are taking part in that cleanup process. And most recently, I heard of a vendor where they're actually a private firefighting company where they can actually track wildfires. They know the locations of a particular client. And if something goes in harm's way, they'll work with the local fire departments to make sure those properties are protected. And in some cases, they'll actually go out and spray a retardant on the building. So, you know, not only are you doing those items to reduce risk, but you're also giving me as a broker a story to tell the markets. And I think that's the most important part. You know, the markets are seeing so many submissions come across their desk. You know, if there's no story to tell, in other words, they're just rolling the dice on whether there's a loss or not, you know, they might take a pass. But if I can go in there and say, look, this is what the districts are doing to prevent losses. This is a story that I have to tell that really does make a difference.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong, Ryan, but I believe Cal Fire, in the past, they have done pre-fire season inspections out at maybe more of the rural school districts. Do you know if that is something districts can take advantage of?
Yeah, we've actually seen a couple of just a one-page report that came back from Cal Fire or even local firefighting houses, basically saying that they're in compliance with a certain brush clearance. So I mentioned earlier about the modeling. You know, we actually can zone down on particular locations that might be the drivers of that. What I told you was the average annual loss. So you can, if I run 10,000 locations, I might get the top 10 locations as far as adding to that exposure. So, you know, it would help if I could zone down and say, look, we've had Cal Fire out at those 10 locations and they've all passed with flying colors. So again, going back to adding to my story to go into the marketplace, those are good things to have.
And I'll ask you as well, Ryan, we all want stability in the markets. Going forward, do you see increased volatility over the next few years, or is anything getting better, which gives us hope for a more flatline market?
Sure. I think, you know, we've been delivering rate increases and in some cases significant rate increases over the last 4 years. From what I've seen early on in 2021, you know, we are still seeing rate increases, but I think they're starting to slow a bit. I think when you get pricing to a certain level, it starts to pique the interest of potentially new capital entering the market. So we have seen some new syndicates pop up this year in out of London. There's one new market here domestically. We've also seen companies like Lexington come out and say that they have more aggressive budgets this year. Some of the syndicates in London have said they want to double the amount of premium that they're writing. Those are signs that new competition is entering the market, and ultimately that's what we need. So to give you another example, I'm working on a deal right now where we're basically oversubscribed in the primary layer, so that first layer above the deductible. So that when you have more people trying to fill out that layer than you need, you're able to cut back some of the folks that might have higher pricing. So in that particular case, we're closer to a flat renewal, but where we're having problems is in that higher, in those higher layers. Basically, the ones where I talked before, where they used to put up big lines, people are still trying to figure out what they want to do. So they're cutting back in some cases. They're getting off of California wildfire risks. So we are still having problems there. But if the bulk of the premium is down in the primary and you're able to get a better result there, even though you're still having problems in the higher layers, the combined result is probably better than what we've seen in 19 and 20.
Are CISC member districts experiencing the same level of volatility as districts elsewhere in the state or even across the country? Or are we in any way unique, Ryan?
No, you're not unique. I think I can't think of one school district or school pool that has not had a rate increase over the last 4 years. It's been very tough out there. And this is going outside of California as well. I work on other states. Now, there's certain states that just don't have the type of exposure from a peril perspective. So, you know, certain states are easier than others. But when you drill down to individual accounts, there's different, you know, things that come into play. Loss history, deductible levels. So while some might have, you know, a 20% rate increase and others might have a 10, it really depends on, you know, how the account's performing and the deductibles and retentions. You know, we've seen retentions, obviously, even with CISC, some of the retentions have gone up, but that's not abnormal across the board. We've seen that. I think I can think of one school district that has maintained their deductible level, but at the same time, the rate has probably increased at a higher rate increase. Yeah.
I see. Well, Ryan, as always, we appreciate your counsel, your advice, not only today, but as we work together throughout the year, and we, you know, look forward to a continued partnership with you, and really do appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the CISC podcast and greatly appreciate you listening to our show. Please check the CISC property and liability website at cisc.kern.org for a complete listing of podcast topics under the property and liability tab. Until next time, stay safe as we continue with the CISC mission of schools helping schools.
Production facilities for the CISC podcast are provided by KETN, a service of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools.